Good evening and welcome to Slam the Gavel, the show that tells it all regarding family court, other court issues, as well as CPS. I am your host, Marianne Petrie. This episode of Slam the Gavel is sponsored by CPS Protect Consulting Services. Child Protective Services cases are among the most frightening experiences any parent can endure. Don't face them alone. With Urgent Assist by CPS Protect, you get the peace of mind to raise your children as you see fit. And the personalized assistance of their team of expert child welfare consultants, former CPS investigators themselves, right when you need it. Get started absolutely free at cpsprotect.com/register. Also, another announcement, go to the site, pleasedoyourjob.com. We need 2,000 more signatures to get a very, very important case reopened. That's pleasedoyourjob.com, all one sentence. I have a return guest on. I'm so happy to have my friend Joan Cloth-Zannard on. She was last on season 4. Episode 6, 52, and 72, where we had talked last about personality disorders and how to deprogram the false narrative. But today, we're going to talk about this epidemic of ADA discrimination within the court system. So I totally welcome you, Joan. How are you? And what do you think of all this this discrimination? Because I've heard about it, too.
It is a problem. When I reach out to the ADA organizations, you know, nationally, they tell me that it is their words to me were epidemic. Otherwise, I would never have used it. I didn't realize how bad it was. You go into the courts, and if you're disabled, they don't care. I've seen cases where the person has ADA accommodations. The judge has turned around and refused, and just because they have a disability, has decided that they are incompetent and without an evidentiary hearing, violate the person's rights, be allowed to either to fire their attorney and self-represent or be put on in addition to assist their attorney. We have seen this is a First Amendment right, constitutional right violation. I have seen cases where the person is so traumatized and their PTSD and stress and anxiety are so off the charts because it's their case and they're being attacked from every direction and they're being treated horribly in the courts, yelled at. I've had seen clients get yelled at and to be honest, clearly, most of these cases do not belong sitting in a courtroom like this. There should be a mediation process. There should be a mental health professionals. There should be if they have a physical disability, they should have their support people, should be there with them, shouldn't be blocked out. You know, and a support person, they make you register who you are with the courts, that you're a support person for this individual. I am twixt and tween on that. Is it, that's a private thing, if you will. Just like my your ADA records are supposed to be sealed with the courts, your advocate should be, and who they are should be sealed as well.
I didn't know that.
The only way I could see it being appropriate would be if the advocate is put on to also assist the person in presenting their case and speaking for them because the person is so tongue-tied and so much PTSD they can't get what's on the paper off the paper. And this person just reads the other person's information, basically, so they make sure they get it out there and explained. That process, though, you have to actually write a motion or a form of a request with the ADA for that. Some judges will allow it, some will not. But then that leaves the person who they've refused to allow this floundering and struggling to get their point across to the courts. We see they accommodate your physical issues in the court. You have a wheelchair, you're fully accommodated. But if you have anything that's that's not visual to them, what we call a hidden disability, with the exception of blindness and hearing loss, because those are the three, physical, hearing, and blindness, that are have been around forever. Having situational conditions caused by things like legal abuse, false arrests, family court issues where you're fighting just to be a parent in your child's life, being constantly gaslit, harassed, stalked. These are all things that cause PTSD, stress, and anxiety in somebody. And if that person can't afford an attorney and they have to self-represent, they're at a completely disadvantaged position because they are unable to tell their story.
And be heard.
And be heard. And the whole point of court is to be heard. Mm-hmm. So when we send somebody into a courtroom, even some of these the public defenders don't get it. They don't. They quantify things in a manner that doesn't match. I've seen, you know, look, do I believe domestic violence is absolutely horrific? Absolutely. I'm a victim of domestic violence, okay? But when the domestic violence is directly and proportionally related to a medical condition that had gotten out of control, they are therefore not in totality responsible. It's a disability. So, for example, if they're a substance abuser, if they are now clean and sober under the ADA, they quantify as legally disabled. You can't now use that. They can't now say that because in the past you had a substance abuse problem, well, you need to be charged, and they withhold the kids, or in a case of a domestic violence case. Wait a second. We need to back up here. The person has a disability. They have now got that disability under control. Just like somebody who is unable to see and now uses Braille or has a service dog to make, you can't now use that disability to not allow them a voice, to not allow them equal rights. Mm-hmm. They're disabled. And the ADA considers it that. Look, I understand that there are a lot of abusive people out there. Mm-hmm. Why are there so many abusive people? Well, let's really be real. This is a very angry, rage-filled society. And it's sad. When you have this many people who are raging and angry, whether they use physical, sexual, or psychological, that's a problem.
Right.
Not denying that, and I never will. But if I have a client who has diabetes and he didn't realize his sugar was way off, and his daughter was there, and she knows, they've known he has diabetes, family know, you know, but, and they were talking about something, she talked back to him and he took something and it got smashed on the floor. He threw it on the floor. Well, he wouldn't normally have done that, but his diabetes had triggered in him, and then he collapsed. And his daughter knew what to do. She called the wife with claimed that he was abusive and is trying to take the child from him. No. The lesson here is now the child knows, hey, Dad, slow down. I think your sugar's off.
Right.
The lesson here is that this is family. You help family. Your father, you now know that anything that starts to look like this, know that you know your father has diabetes, you can say, hey, Dad, did you take your diabetes? Did you eat something today? That does not make him a hardcore domestic violent abusive person.
No.
And this is insane. There are countless things like this. I have other cases with diabetes. And the guy eventually died from the diabetes, had no relationship with his kids, no matter how hard he tried, because the mother told, and he wasn't violent. He just had very uncontrollable diabetes.
Caused by the stress, too.
Yep. She took these kids from him. Had he maybe had his kids around him, he might have had more of a will to live. And his kids might have saved his life because they might have been around him at the time to know, oh, dad's having a diabetic seizure. You know? So this is what I call very sick, I don't really like using the word demonic.
I know, but
demonic,
it's true.
But demented, irrational thinking to take your children from a parent who has a medical condition such as diabetes. Well, you just, what if this is a genetic condition?
Right.
So now your child gets diabetes?
Right, and the kids
What's
need
that
to
child
know this.
Think? They're useless. They're no good because this is that's seriously warped thinking that you would put your child through that.
And also, the kids need to know the
They
other
don't know
parents'
how to
medical
recognize.
History.
Well, not only that, this is a phenomenal life lesson for a child that if they're out in the real world and they're out outside of their family and they see someone having the same signs and symptoms as what they've seen in their father, they can say, hey, he might be having a diabetic seizure, and they might save somebody's freaking life. You have just taken a really important lesson that a child could learn from. It's the same thing as a parent whose mental health condition. Don't get me wrong. Do I believe that a child should be with a parent who's mentally unstable and not able to care for them? No. What I do understand is that child still has to have a relationship. They need to know how to negotiate other people with this personality issue, because they're going to come up against this in their life. They're going to have a boss who might have this personality.
Oh, yeah.
So by helping the child to understand that this is inappropriate, but it's a heads up, there's a mental health issue. Or if the person is somebody who's abusive, they now know what to look for. When you pull them away and they can't even look, I'm not telling you to put the kid in the abuser's care. No, but that kid knows that 50% of them is that other parent. And there are good things about that other parent. If there aren't, yes, that is the very rare extreme cases you might have with a sociopath, a severe sociopsychopath, okay, who kills people or whatever. That's not the cases we're talking about here. We're talking about, what if this was an intact family and they didn't want to get divorced? How would the medical community manage a case of somebody who was a substance abuser and only got violent when they drank? What would an intact family do? They wouldn't court the kids off and say, you can't ever see your dad again. Dad would be in therapy. Dad would be maybe in a rehab. The kids would now be learning, these are signs. If you have friends who are having a problem, now you know what to look for. You might save a friend's life.
And this would also teach the kids empathy.
Yes, it teaches the kids empathy. Exactly. And in an intact family, the whole family would be in therapy anyways, because the wife and the children are going to need their own ability to know, well, what do we do? What is the plan? If dad starts drinking again, what is the plan? What do we want to put down? So dad understands, and I'm using dad just because that's what comes to mind. Or mom. Okay, change the pronoun. Same.
Okay, yeah.
Mom, the noun. Change it to mom. You know, and mom, if we think mom's starting to drink again, what do we do? Do as a family, what are we? Well, we're going to go get mom into therapy, or we're going to tell mom that if she's going to do that, she needs to leave the house. Okay. We learn to put the proper borders and boundaries in. If we are not teaching our children how to navigate the world and the personalities in it, we got a big problem.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
we are not chalking somebody who's taken a child and thrown them into a wall. This isn't, those are such rare cases. We're not talking somebody who's murdered up the other parent. These are such rare cases. We're talking and as if this was, you know, and because here's the reality. How are we going? This problem is growing exponentially. If we end up with 80% of our population with mental health issues in this realm, we're going to just blow up the world. It can't survive it. So if we don't start changing how we manage these things and teaching the empathy, we're headed in a very bad direction, because these children, this is all multi-generational behavior they're learning.
Oh, I completely agree. In fact, when I was a psychiatric nurse way back in 94, I think it was. Yes. And I was working on the adult unit, but some group home was bringing in this woman's 8-year-old daughter to see her. So I had to take mom down to see her daughter and just sit in the common area so she could visit with her daughter.
Right.
And
this is
it was, oh, it was just so, that child looked at her mother and her eyes just lit up. So happy to see her mother. So someone was facilitating this child seeing her mother. And, you know, the mother was in a bad way. The mother was talking about wanting to be Santa Claus and buying her all these presents. And the child looked at her so adoring. I was just like blown away. That child accepted her mother. And then the visit only lasted, we'll say, 15 minutes, because that's all they were allotted. But it was just very touching.
That is exactly what would occur in an intact family. Let's say it wasn't a mental health situation. Let's say the person was had cancer. Would we be keeping the kids from the kid from their lap? No, we would not. And this claiming we're sheltering our kids from a home. No, you are taking away these extremely valuable pieces and lessons in life that are teaching our children how to have empathy, how to recognize inappropriate behavior ahead of time, so they themselves, if they have to, can steer clear of it, or they themselves know how to manage somebody. Working with narcissists is very common. So when you go to work, if you have a narcissist and you have no idea how to handle them, you're just going to get sucked into their crap.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I have worked with people with these personality disorders, and being a nurse, I was lucky I could get away from them by offering to work on another floor. So I would jump floors and they'd say, oh, someone needs to be pulled to 6 North. Oh, I'll go. It's like that got me away from a lot of people. But, you know, what if you can't? People need to know how to deal with these issues.
Right. And here's the thing. When you're talking, let's say, where a parent has lost custody of their kid because they've alienated the child. The child still is going to have to see that other parent. It's just that in the beginning, you have to have a way to break that unnatural, borderless boundary the other parent has created. And it only takes a couple of days. Then, once that's done, there is no reason we can't, that and the therapists all put this in, you know, have therapeutic supervised visitation to grow from. Well, the problem is the alienators refuse to go to visitation or therapeutic supervised visitation. Well, that's the stupidest thing. At least if you're in therapeutic supervised visitation, you have an expert there who is going to help you and your children to establish a healthy bond and relationship so that you don't have to do supervised visitation anymore.
Right.
Do it. Work. See, make some changes. Yes, change is hard. It's hard for anybody to do. So do it in small increments. Do the supervised visitation for a longer amount of time so that it's smaller increments of change that you're making. So it isn't as uncomfortable. Super therapeutic supervised visitation can go from being in an office to maybe you guys are doing, you're sitting outside doing when it's nice out. You know, there are other ways of doing this. We just There's just too much banging and combativeness about it. There, it's this therapy is used with debunking religious cults. So you can't throw this out. It's just that we're going to have to adapt and change a little bit, maybe where or how you do this so that you're because these kids, we don't want to pull them from their parents permanently either, because that's just as damaging. Yes, can the children be mad at the other parent? But I also want that child to get some compassion. That child should not be mad at the other parent. They should have compassion to understand that that other parent, this is all they knew. This is the way they were raised. They didn't know that there was another way of being a family, that you didn't, it's a shared responsibility.
Oh, I agree. I agree.
And
See,
we're not talking shared financial. We're talking shared developmental, shared raising, shared growing these little beings and beings, whatever you want to call them, into healthy adults who make good decisions. They might make some mistakes. We all do. That's how we bloody gosh darn learn. Don't make a mistake. You don't know that there's a that you can't do that sometimes.
Well, definitely. I remember as when my children were legally abducted from me, and I would see them every other weekend because, you know, I'm so dangerous. I had my youngest in the car with me, and I don't know, he was about maybe 16, 17, maybe. And we were driving down the road, and there was a poor man on a bicycle in the pouring rain with eight grocery bags on his handlebars. And I said, "Oh my God, that poor guy. I would hate to have to be in a on a bicycle in the rain with my groceries." His response was, "That's his fault." And I said, "How is that his fault?" And no answer. I said, "You don't know what happened to him in his life. You don't know if he's a homeless veteran. You don't know if
He might be just have been a delivery man who happens to be really good at putting eight packages on his bike and run.
right. I've always
I
tried
had a similar.
Yes, I've always tried to teach my kids compassion. There would be homeless people coming up the street here and there. My kids would see me load up, you know, a plastic bag, and I would put whatever I could find for food in this bag and run it down the driveway, and they saw me, you know, talk to this
Right. This,
person.
look, years ago, I was sitting at a similar attitude, but with an attorney sitting in a courthouse, and we were discussing how the cost of living here in my state is so expensive that people that we are losing people, they're just moving out. They can't handle it. I said, we have no kids from the age of 18 to 30. We have very small population of kids from 18 to 30, 35, because it's too expensive to live here unless they're living at home, or they happen to be lucky enough to have family money or a really good job. Okay. Otherwise, they're not here. And he says to me, oh, and I said, and because of that, we have more and more people moving out. This attorney's response, good. The more room for the rest of us. I'm like, excuse me, who's putting the groceries on your shelves? Who's mowing your lawn? Who's building? Come on.
Yeah, this is scary. This is
That was a
scary.
scary attitude, really narcissistic, scary attitude.
When I interviewed Judge Mary Elizabeth Bullock, she had said that there's 1 in 20 are sociopaths, or 1 in 30.
And that's because That's because of the way we are handling and growing our children. They are not getting empathy. They are, and the adults can't get the, don't want to get the help. We've got it. When we go into family court, this should not be illegal, as all pinned on legality. This is about an unhealthy family, whether it be both parents, one parent, or all the entire family. And we need to be instead looking at it. So when they're trying to mediate and one side is refusing to mediate, well, you know, if barring there really being serious physical abuse, it should fall 50-50, and all the financial shit, you guys want to take your time, you want to screw around with that, you go ahead and screw around and waste all your money, because every bit of financial will be washed away with the amount of time you're spending. But you need to, you know, and the kids are just going to have to be able to go back and forth.
Oh, definitely. In fact,
this is ridiculous.
Oh, definitely. Because as you know, I co-parented very well with my ex for approximately 10 years before he married a woman who worked in the courthouse. So we had a schedule. The kids were going back and forth between the houses, and it was working beautifully. But you go before a judge who's in collusion with an opposing attorney, and he's going, I don't like the way these kids are being bounced back and forth between the houses. And it's like, buddy, where have you been? Yeah, we've been doing this for 10 years and they're not being bounced. But right, what do you do?
Was he paying you child support at the time?
No, he had totally taking the kids away from me, cost me my job, and was...
No, that's not what I'm asking. The reason I'm asking is you're telling me that when she came into the picture, that's
he
when...
He was. And that was, again, Joan...
Okay, and that, I'm telling you now, that is why she did what she did and why the tables turned, because she didn't want his hard-earned money going to you. This was all about the child support, and not him being concerned about the child support, her convincing him.
Right. And he allowed it. And he was, come on, he was a vice president of a company only paying $300 a month in child support. Do you know what person would kill to pay $300 a month?
A month?
For three kids.
you know what? Now, and you're telling me this, I'm going to say to you, that she, this was about control. Did she ever have children of her own?
No, she could not have kids of her
children.
Own.
That was the reason.
Yes.
That was the added reason. It was not the money. It was because she couldn't have children of her own and she wanted your kids.
I also learned that she had also wanted to be a nurse back in her younger years. I don't know why she didn't do it. She could have done it. I did it on my own. I got my own associate's degree, paid for it. And then 23 years later, it was all taken away from me. These people are...
That's sick. She did that on purpose. She made sure you lost your nurse's license, because she didn't have it. You weren't going to have it. You weren't going to be one education step better than her.
Right. Because when she...
This woman is... She is not... physically sociopathic, she is psychologically sociopathic, that she has to rid and destroy anybody she perceives as a threat to her. You are a threat because it's your children and she doesn't have any children. So, and I suspect this comes from her childhood. Someone needs to look into her childhood. I will guarantee that this same or similar issue occurred to her mother when she was growing up. Mm-hmm. So this is what she believes is how you behave and what you're supposed to do. I would suspect there was somebody cheated in the family. Mm-hmm. And this is the response is
right.
And she's not going to let anybody take her man from her.
Well, what I had heard, and, you know, because she had been married for 22 years and then got divorced. And I had heard that he had cheated on her, but I don't blame him. If you saw her, I'd probably cheat on her too.
That was the trigger. And right. I would suspect that that was her, that her that her mother had also married somebody who had cheated on her. And so she married somebody who wasn't going to be there. Or, and in part, she, this is commonly can happen, where one of the parents or one of the partners in the family doesn't take care of themselves anymore. They don't, and then they're out cheating, and so the other spouse feels unloved, like they don't care, and they go out and they cheat because they just don't know what to do. And or they happen to become, it was a happenstance situation. Do I condone cheating? No, I do not.
No, I mean, I don't either.
But I can understand where it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, you know, I've never hit that point in a relationship where it was so bad that I had to go out and cheat, or where I was, there was somebody there that I was so tempted, or that my relationship with my spouse was so weak that I could be tempted.
Mm-hmm.
But that's me. That's just, my parents are still together. That is just me.
Mm-hmm.
So she's got a family of origin baggage
that mm-hmm. has
never been unpacked. And without unpacking it, how is she going to know what's in it, what it's made of? What has made her who she, how she is or who she is? What has determined her understanding of what a family should or should be? What her understanding of a relationship should be? She doesn't, no one's able to unpack it because she's not ready to let down those walls. And this is where we make this mistake, and we're just not treating people in these situations the way it needs to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
It, putting us into court and fighting tooth and nail, that doesn't help the kids.
No,
we're supposed to be creating a situation of normalcy for these children. How can there be a situation of normalcy
mm-hmm.
when you're putting the kids in one house more than the other, where you're letting one parent just verbally abuse the other, you know, in court where they're running? This isn't normal.
No. But then, Joan, let me ask you this, because I don't want to keep you all morning, but what do you do? What does an ADA advocate and a parent do when the opposing side calls out, well, they're mentally ill? And then the judge puts that parent on the stand and asks them what medications they're on.
They can't do that.
They did. I mean, this happened to me.
They legally can. I don't think they can legally do that. It's a HIPAA violation. Now, remember, your case is very old, and HIPAA may have not existed back then.
It did. I believe it did. This was 2015.
What year? When was it? 2015?
Yeah.
Yes, we had HIPAA laws then. That was very illegal.
Oh,
number
yes.
One, he should have stopped the hearing and said, okay, you're claiming mental illness. Well, then I'm ordering a psych eval for both of you. We are going to have an evidentiary hearing, and we're going to have both of you psych eval for it. That's what, you know, you want to claim they're mentally ill, and you're going to use that tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to know if that's the case, then we don't belong litigating in court. If that's the case, we should be doing mediation and therapy. No, we're not going to. We're going to do therapy. Yes. Will I let you guys get divorced? Absolutely. You can untie that knot. You can split your assets any way you want. But anything having to do with those kids, sorry. We're going to be, you're claiming mental health illnesses, then it doesn't belong in being litigated. It belongs in therapy and having mediation.
Well, see, the judge, he was a little bit off, and I had a psych eval. It was pristine. My attorney was jumping up and down, and I requested that the psychologist come in and testify, and he did. He shot down the opposition. However, the judge, like I had said, had been in collusion with the opposing attorney.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't have mattered who you had in there.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
And but that being said, you had serious grounds for an appeal and recusal of that judge.
He would not recuse. He refused to recuse.
Of course he did. But you could have asked for his removal. Another way, it's more difficult because it would have been blatantly obvious. What were his grounds for why he took the kids from you? That he claimed you were mentally ill?
He was, yeah, that I was mentally ill. And
Okay. So yeah. Right there, you could have gotten him thrown off the bench for making a medical diagnosis completely that is incongruent with the medical records that were presented in court.
Right.
And you could have gotten him and then said, this behavior indicates, and I'm not an attorney, folks. This is just common sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense says, and this would indicate a bias by the judge against the other parent without an evidentiary hearing and against all provided medical. See, the problem is most parents have an attorney who won't do that.
Right.
Won't stand up to these people because they're afraid their attorney themselves is afraid that they will be blackballed. So it leaves it to the client has to do it.
Right. The attorney, I had a female attorney and he would just steamroll her. He was a chauvinist and he did not care about her or what she had to say. So I really can't blame the attorney.
No, it wasn't the attorney. But that attorney needed to then sit back and go, look, here's the problem. If I try to file this against the judge, I will get blackballed.
Right.
But you can file it and I will give you a little assistance
mm-hmm.
off the record.
Oh,
or
I
I
think,
will
yeah.
get somebody to assist you because this should not have happened.
Right. I did write to the AOPC here in Pennsylvania and
yeah.
I explained the collusion. And they didn't think it was unethical enough, I guess.
Oh, no, though. No. That was an ethics violation against. Technically, he's claimed by his doing what he did, he's labeling you disabled. Therefore, he just violated your disability rights to be an equal parent because he's now labeled you as disabled without an evidentiary hearing and again, against. So you would have to file, you might have to file, I don't know, a suit against this guy, this a judge? I don't know. At this point, it's too late. Back then, you would have filed something with the Judiciary Committee and you would have sent it up for an appeal. And if you had had the money, you would have appealed it.
Right.
And the judge would have been in a lot of trouble because there was no evidence from the other side that you were mentally ill. It was the statement of a non-expert person claiming something.
See, and this is what, I mean, not just in my case, but what everybody needs to know, because this is the silver bullet they will call out as you're mentally
yep.
ill and you're alienating the kids from the other parent. And this is what I had to deal with. And also this judge, believe it or not, he was running the courtroom like a three-ring circus. No surprise there, right? He's talking about child support, then he'd hop to a pension fund, and then he's talking about it, something else. And
yeah.
so what happened was, and all I can tell people is to pray, and pray I did. I prayed that God would deal with this judge because I couldn't control him. He would not recuse. He was off on a bandwagon, and I questioned what medications he was on.
He was on.
Right?
Yeah, you know,
right.
So,
and, go ahead.
And but that's just it. We're, you know, we've got people up on the bench who, for one reason or another, are questionable in their ethics. And their ethics are questionable enough that they would consider harming a family and its children by doing an order clearly in your case. Evidence stacked against the other side in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just too blatantly obvious. There was nothing, he had nothing to cite. But unless you had enough money to appeal the damn case, which I believe if you had been able to, if you could have appealed it and had the money to do that and had a proper attorney, because it's very expensive.
Oh, exactly.
That's a problem. We should not be having to deal with these extremely expensive appellate cases. When a case is got serious issues and we can't get justice in the family courts, there has to be a less expensive way of doing an appeal other than us doing it ourselves and not be and having to become an attorney, an appellate attorney to do this. It's very difficult to write an appeal. I am not good at it.
I've tried. It didn't involve the judge, because what happened to the judge was, in my prayers, I just asked God to deal with him. Every day, God, you deal with him. So God did. Because on March 2nd of 2015, he removed the boys away from me, which caused mass havoc in their lives. So
were you keeping the kids from the father, or the father was trying to just take them from you? Okay.
Yeah, the father took them. He happily gave the father full custody, and the other side, the stepmother and her sisters and mother, they were all jumping up and down, whooping, clapping, and cheering. And my attorney and I are looking over like, WTF? But, you know, you've got to trust in God.
You have to remember, the other side was believed that you were all sorts of horrible things. They have no clue that it was all lies.
Oh, I think they knew it was lies because his wife.
No, his wife and him knew. They then made and spun their own story to sweep in the rest of the family.
Right. But I think I know that one of her sisters also worked in the courthouse.
Okay.
So I think they all knew what was going on. But however, on March 2nd of 2017, I get a phone call from my friend and she said, "Hey, did you hear on the news?" I said, "What?" She said, "Your judge died." And I said, "Well, God dealt with him. Now he's answering to a higher judge."
Judge. Yeah. Because you don't do what you do, these things. You just don't. I don't care how much money you're going to get paid. I don't care whether they're going to go after you and kill you if you don't do this. You don't do it. You don't harm another to save your own life. You do the right thing. You go to the right authorities. You tell them what's going on. You talk to the other side. You get that. You say, "Look, I have a quagmire problem here. I don't want to trigger this person. My life is in danger. We're going to have to figure something else out here." And, you know, too bad that it's your personal life, whatever it is. I mean, you just, somehow you don't take that family and throw them out just for your own benefit. Yet it's just not okay.
No.
And this brings us back to, you know, these judges ignoring ADA rights in the courts. I'm sorry, you know, it comes down to this, that we have rights. If you have a family coming into your courtroom that can't even co-parent, that cannot just even divide money, or fighting over the children, there is no bona fide proven abuse charges. I don't care how many times the other parent has filed. The more they file, the more obvious it is that the problem isn't probably even existing. Because if it did exist, you'd leave it to the mandated reporters. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, you don't keep filing and filing. No, you leave it to the mandated reporters. If there's really abuse going on, a mandated reporter should be able to see it. And if they can't see it,
we got problems.
You got a problem.
Oh, yeah.
That if a mandated reporter can't see that your child's being abused, then you can't keep filing because it's probably not solid enough evidence of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the mandated reporters aren't recognizing it.
Well, see, this is why I'm so glad I had you on. And I definitely want to have you back on again.
We could talk forever.
We could talk forever. But
and this is why I think, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the ADA and the disabilities in the courts, sorry, but you have to protect our rights. You cannot violate them. And when it comes to family court, these should not be litigated cases. If there is a mental health issue going on, or even a physical issue going on, we need to be in therapy that specifically addresses this. Mm-hmm. And for all of us to learn how to have empathy and compassion for each other, we need to learn differently. Because this is not okay. I get it. Okay, so he cheated and you don't want to be in the same room with him? You don't have to be in the same room with him. Oh, she stole all your money. I got it. Yeah, you're a little pissed off. And you want your money back? Yeah, I got that.
Mm-hmm.
But she's going to have to return the money. Or you're going to have to let it go. Or she's going to have to give you back half of it because half of it would have been hers in the first place or his in the first place. Whatever. You know? Show these kids by example how to work with others. This is why we have wars. Because we got children out there who never learned how to play in the dang sandbox together.
Oh, exactly. Yes. Thank you so much for your insight. I'm glad we could talk. How can people reach you if they have any questions?
For this segment, because it's about the ADA, I mean, even though I mixed in some parental alienation and family courts, you can get hold of me at info@advocate4fam.com. If you're trying to get hold of me for the alienation end of things and family court, use info@p as in Peter, a as in apple, s as in Sam -intervention.org.
Thank you. I will put that all in the podcast notes, and I appreciate your time. And hang on, don't jump off. Slam the Gavel is a podcast to help the public understand what really goes on in these family courtrooms. I'm your host, Marianne Petrie, author of Dismantling Family Court Corruption, Why Taking the Kids Was Not Enough, Cry Out for Justice, Poems of Truth, and Raised by These Wolves, How Family and Federal Courts Are Failing Our Children. You can find me on Spotify, Apple iTunes, Anchor FM, iHeartRadio, and other platforms I don't even know about. And feel free to buy me a coffee to help keep this podcast going. And you can find that also in the podcast notes. Thank you, Joan Cloth Zanner. Thank you for all your insight.